are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. Today's message is week two in our series, Let's Take a Break. For more information and to visit us online, go to midcurrentchurch.org. And now, here's Pastor Sten with this week's message.
I would say one of the most amusing things to watch in my life these days, which doesn't necessarily say a whole lot about how exciting my life is. Nonetheless, one of the most amusing things for me to watch these days is my two older kids running outside to check the mail. I always watch from the window. It's too good. Our mailbox is actually on the other side of the street from our house and from our driveway, which for the kids learning how to do this whole deal, it presents a small challenge. Like most neighborhoods, it seems these days, ours has plenty of like 18-year-olds who drive like 80 miles an hour down the like 40-yard, you know, stretches of road in front of our houses. It's the very same streets that our kids chase balls into off the driveway, the very same streets that my kids, have to cross in order to check the mail, which they really enjoy doing. And we really enjoy, my wife and I, we enjoy empowering them with this small little bit of responsibility. But we weren't about to send them out there without being confident that they had really mastered the one rule that's drilled into the head, I think, of every child in America, maybe even in the world, the one rule that we all need to learn about crossing the street. What is it? Look both ways. Look both ways. Our kids, I would say, have it down pretty good enough, at least I should say, for us to let them out on their own to check the mail. And that is precisely when I begin to watch in amazement. My six-year-old son is hilarious. He just kind of goes through the motion. Typically, he's already like three or four steps into the street, and then with his body moving full speed ahead, he just kind of does one of these right here. I'm not sure his eyes actually make contact with anything in either direction, right? But his head definitely does a little bit of a swivel, just enough to satisfy my and Erica's instructions to look both ways. My daughter, on the other hand, she's eight. She's our firstborn. She's really the best. Totally different, experience here. I watch this from the window. I'm seeing all this. She runs out to the curb. Boom, full stop. And then she kind of bends at the waist a little bit before she does a very thorough and a very intentional scan to the left and then to the right. And then just in case in the moments that she's been watching over here, a car has emerged from the end of the block on the left, she does one more scan to the left. And when the coast is clear, then she sprints to the mailbox, grabs the mail, turns around, and repeats the whole full scan to the left, to the right, and then back again. She's got it down. Okay, now their approaches may vary just a little bit here, but truthfully, as I watch this, there is some satisfaction as I watch from the window. There's some satisfaction in knowing that my kids have learned this vital, vital childhood lesson. I even feel this small sense of pride as I watch them kind of learn and grow and mature right before my very eyes, right? They have mastered the skill of looking both ways. Feels good. But I'll be honest with you. This is really about the only time in my kids' lives that I want them to take that much time to look both ways, to the left and to the right. Here's why. For kids these days, we call that type of activity, right, looking both ways, we call it precaution. Okay, but for adults, here's what happens. Something far more poisonous, something far more destructive takes place, right? For kids, we call it precaution, but for adults, we call it comparison. When we look both ways, when we look to the left and when we look to the right to measure ourselves up against those around us. And it can have pretty devastating consequences. And that's exactly what I want to talk about today in the second week of this series that we are in called Let's Take a Break, right? For anyone with school-age kids, we're in one of the most highly anticipated windows of the school year. It's kind of the spring break window here. And I don't know if you had plans or have plans for vacation, but my hope in this short series was to give every single one of us permission to take a vacation. Not necessarily a vacation to somewhere warm or to somewhere tropical, but to take a vacation from our problems. Okay, last week I talked about worry and how wasteful it is in our lives, and try to help us see that when we worry, what we are really doing is we're just wasting God's promises to us today on problems tomorrow, problems that may not even exist when tomorrow comes. And today I want to talk about comparison. The dangerous game that you and I play when we spend too much time in our lives looking to our left, looking to our right. Ultimately, what we'll see as we continue on here, what I want you to see is that comparison, this game that we play of looking to the left and looking to the right, ultimately, it is a trap for you and for me. And believe it or not, the Bible actually speaks to this trap in a way. The Bible actually speaks to this game that we play called comparison, and even shares some wisdom about how we avoid this comparison trap in the first place. And so I want us to see what it is that God's word has to say about this whole thing. So if you would, I want you to turn your attention with me in a moment here to the book of Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament. And the truth is, one of the Bible's biggest dispensers of this kind of wisdom, that's what we're going to see, some wisdom about this thing called comparison. One of the Bible's biggest dealers, dispensers of wisdom, is a guy by the name of Solomon. He was the third king of Israel. And Solomon is maybe the most perfect person to talk about this comparison trap, mostly because when he looked to his left and when he looked to his right, there was no one even in the same zip code as this dude, right? If you want to read his resume, go home and read Ecclesiastes chapter 1-3. What you'll see is that he was not just like wiser and wealthier than everyone. He was the wisest and the wealthiest person, something to ever live. So he was truly in a league of his own. And here's what then should interest you and me about what he has to say. From his perch on the very top, he made some interesting observations about what everyone else looks like from his vantage point. And that's what I want us to see today. So if you would, turn your attention to me to verse number 4. Here's what he says. He says, "Then I observed," this is Solomon speaking, right, from his place on the top. He says, "Then I observed what most people are motivated, that most people are motivated to success because," listen to this, "they envy their neighbors." From his place on the top, that's his observation, that he observed most people are motivated to success because they envy their neighbors. So let me translate what he's saying here. He's saying, I've been watching people. And he's saying it is so obvious and it is so plain to see that what motivates people today, it's not you know, the good of the community. It's not a brighter future for our kids. It's not world peace even. And it's not the satisfaction of a job well done. He says what motivates people is envy. He's observed that all of the hard work and all of the achievement is typically motivated solely by a desire to keep up with or to maybe even surpass one's neighbors in possession or in status or in something else. See, and I think you and I think we play this game, this comparison game all the time. We fall into this trap time and in time again. And here's how it looks, right? Too often we want to know where we stand. We want to know how it is that we measure up in the world. And so what do? We look to our left. And what we see is sometimes we see a bunch of people who are maybe slower and shorter and heavier or poorer or nerdier or miserabler than we are. And so we feel pretty good about ourselves. We think, hey, I'm not doing half bad. Okay? But that satisfaction that we feel when we look in this direction, it usually doesn't last very long, because eventually we look to our right. And we no longer like what we see anymore, because now when we look to our right, what we see is a bunch of people who are, or at least appear to be, happier. We see a bunch of people who appear to be smarter or richer or wiser or prettier or hipper or successfuler than we are. They take vacations that are warmer, and they drive cars that are nicer and newer, and they have houses that are bigger, and they have grass that is greener, and they have Christmas lights that are hung straighter and shine brighter. And then all of a sudden, we don't feel so great about ourselves anymore. Okay? Welcome to what many will refer to as the comparison trap. It's a never-ending, it's a revolving door of have and of have not, and of better, but well, not quite best, and of pride and insecurity, all depending on which direction we're looking. And from where Solomon stood, right, he could see that the standard people were using was this. The standard people were using to determine where they stood, it was typically where everybody else stood. They were looking to their left and they were looking to their right, asking themselves, am I okay? They're looking to their left and they're looking to their right and asking, is my life okay? Is my wife okay? Is my job okay? Is my house okay? Is my car okay? Are my kids okay? Are my accomplishments okay? Where do I stand in all this? And look what Solomon has to say about this kind of game that we play. Look what he says about using this as the standard to measure ourselves. Look what he says about using this as a kind of strategy in life. Here's the second part of verse 4. He says, but this too is meaningless, like chasing after the wind. I'm not sure I've ever watched anyone chase after the wind before, but I have to imagine it is maybe a whole lot more amusing than watching my kids go check the mail. Like chasing the wind. See, all jokes aside here, I don't want us to miss this. What Solomon wants us to understand is that this pursuit, right, looking to our left and looking to our right to determine if we're okay or that we're doing okay, what he wants us to understand is this is a pursuit that has no peace. It is a search that will not satisfy. It is a thirst that will never be quenched. And ultimately, it is a race that has no finish line. Because here's the truth, and here's what I want us to understand today when we take into account what it is that Solomon has to say. Here's what I want us to understand today. There is no win in comparison. In this game that we play, there is no win in comparison. What our neighbor has or does is a horrible, horrible reason for us to work hard and to achieve in life, because the truth is there will always be someone who has more or who does more. And so all of that striving and all of that achieving is ultimately meaningless, like chasing the wind. Now, let me be clear here. I'm not saying that you should not work hard. I'm not saying that you should not try to achieve in life, and neither is Solomon. Look at how he continues in verse 5. Here's what he says. Fools fold their idle hands, leading them to ruin. Solomon is saying, hey, my advice to you is not to just kick up your feet and just kind of phone it in because hard work is meaningless. He's not saying to not leverage the potential and to not strive to become the best that you can be. Right? The key to conquering this comparison trap is ultimately to learn, this is hard, it's ultimately to learn and to master the right amount of striving and achieving. He said excessive striving is like chasing the wind. It's a fool's errand. But laziness isn't the answer either. That's a fool's errand as well. But there is kind of a third way that I think he unpacks for us. And I think it is the escape route out of the comparison trap. Look what Solomon writes in verse 6. He says, and yet better to have one handful with quietness than two handfuls with hard work and chasing after the wind. What in the world is he getting at here? He's actually using, in the original language of the Old Testament, he's using some Hebrew imagery here to kind of paint a picture, to make a point. Here's his point. It's better to have what one hand can hold, leaving one hand open. The implication being that God can put into that open hand whatever God chooses, whenever God chooses. It's better to have one hand full and one hand open than to have two fists clenched so tightly onto everything that we can get our hands on that there really is no room for anything else. He's saying something is certainly better than nothing. Fools fold their idle hands. Right? So we need to keep one hand to the plow. But one hand full in quietness and peace and contentment is actually better than two hands full with never-ending striving and never-ending hard work and no time to rest and not a shred of margin anywhere in your life. Because the truth is, you still will not be content in this kind of arrangement because there is no win in comparison. Now, trust me, this is a hard lesson to learn, the right amount of striving. It's a hard lesson to learn, this kind of balance. And I'm not sure, truthfully, if I am even a master at it. The truth is, I fall into this comparison trap almost every single day in a lot of different areas of life, but I'll be honest about one of them for you today. I'll pull back the curtain and get real honest here for you. One of the places where I strive the most, where I want to achieve and where I want to succeed the most is in this very practice of what I'm doing here, the practice of communication. I don't just want to be a better communicator. I want to be the best communicator in the world, right? I don't want one handful. I want two handfuls. And so here's what happens, right? When I look to my left, so to speak, I will see a lot of colleagues of mine, and sometimes I'll see them in action doing their thing. And I told you I'm going to be honest with you here. And so sometimes when I see them doing their thing, I think to myself about my thing. I think, hey, well, maybe I got something going on here. Maybe I'm not half bad at this thing. I mean, you see, I'm going, hey, maybe I got something going on here. And on any given week, I'll even get some feedback from some of you. You'll share very kind words to me that even affirm that. I got a text message last week from someone who said, stellar message, just moments after Sunday service was over. That feels good. Puts a little feather in my cap and I walk a little taller, stand a little prouder. Not half bad at this thing. But I kid you not, not even 3 days later, what happened? I look to my right. And I see a video someone I know posted online of a pastor and a communicator that I really respect and that I really look up to, that I've learned a lot from. And he was invited to be the chaplain of the day for the Georgia House of Representatives. And I watched the like 10 to 15 minute address that he made to all of the representatives that day. And here's a few things that I was thinking after I watched his address. Number one, I thought, dang, that guy is good. Number two, I thought, I will never, ever, ever be asked to do something like that in my life. And number three, I thought, even if I was, there's no way I would ever come up with something as perfect as he just did right there. And the conclusion I drew, I'm being real honest with you here. The conclusion I drew from that like 10 minute video was this: I stink at this. Like I'm no good, okay? Someone please say comparison trap. Okay, Sunday afternoon, I'm thinking, dang, I'm pretty good at this deal. By Wednesday afternoon, I'm thinking like, maybe it's not in the cards for me. I'll just hang it up. It's a good run. It's fun while it lasted. I think this is the end. And as comical as that sounds, and it is, I get that. It sounds comical, I get that. But in the moment, I'll just be real. It can be pretty discouraging. The doubt can be crippling. The accusation that rings around in your head, it can feel pretty real, and it can mess me up a little bit. It gets in my head. And so in an effort to not stink at what I do, right, as I'm watching this guy, I'm going like, shoot, I got a long way to go, right? In an effort not to stink, I often end up spending so much more time. I spend portions of my weekends working hard to perfect, you know, my craft. I usually try to take Fridays off to be free for Erica and for the kids or just some other things that bring fulfillment in my life. I try to do that. I try to keep Fridays free, but not when I'm stuck in the comparison trap. Okay, there's no time for that. Okay, what about Saturday? Maybe finally a little rest, maybe. Sometimes. But depending on how I'm feeling, it's not unheard of that I would like keep working and keep grinding so that I would be the absolute best by the time Sunday rolls around, right? One handful is rarely enough. I have to go for two. And the result is this. Maybe the same thing is true in some other part of your life. The result is this. Right? Typically, by the end of it all, I'm exhausted and I'm miserable from trying to keep up with some kind of standard that I have used to measure myself. I'm exhausted, tired, burnt out, worn out, completely on empty. It reminds me the way I feel sometimes in those moments after so much striving, after so much hard work to, you know, produce, I don't even know how much extra, right? It reminds me of something another pastor that I really respect warns about when it comes to the comparison trap, this game that we play. He says, the quickest way to kill something special is to compare it to something else. The quickest way to kill something special is to compare it to something else. Midcurrent, however you want to slice it, I think one thing is for sure. There is absolutely no win in comparison. So what if we, I don't know, I understand the rest of the world may never operate like this, but what if we here at Midcurrent Church, what if us here in this little slice of the world, what if we all agree to take a break from comparison? From striving to success purely just based on what it is that we see, trying to keep up with our neighbor. What if we all agreed that it really is, we were just gonna commit and we were gonna agree that it really is better to have one hand full with sanity and with family and with friends and with margin in life than two hands clenched so tightly onto everything that we can get our hands on and not a moment to spare for anything else that might be important in life. See, I think what Solomon is trying to teach us is that escaping the comparison trap, it's all about learning how to be content, right? It reminds me of the words of the great theologian Sheryl Crow. You've heard of her, right? She said, it's not having what you want, it's wanting what you've got. Friends, what if we all learn to be just a little bit more content with what it is we've got? Now, I don't really know what it is that everyone here truly has or doesn't have, but I think that what it is that we've got, what it is that you've got, what it is that I've got, I think it would be a lot more appealing if we stopped looking to the left and if we stopped looking to the right to determine if we're okay or if our kids are okay or if our spouse was okay or if our house was okay. Now, don't get me wrong again. I'm not saying to not notice or to not celebrate or to not champion or cheer on your friends and neighbors because of what they've got or because of what they achieve or because of what they accomplish, right? Celebrating others' success is a really good thing for our soul. So I'm not saying not to do that. I'm not even saying that you shouldn't work hard to achieve more of something in your own life. Just don't let that be the standard for you that drives you to success. Otherwise, I promise, comparison will kill you. And you don't want that. And I don't want that for you. So let me ask you, is it possible that comparison is killing you? How would you know? Here's a few questions to maybe consider. Number one, are you exhausted If you were honest and took a pause, is it possible that you are exhausted from trying to keep up with fill in the blank? Someone in your life, a neighbor, a friend, a coworker. Is it possible that you are exhausted from trying to keep up? Do you ever find yourself saying, I wish I didn't know? I wish I didn't know what they bought or where they just went on vacation. Or I wish I didn't know what team their kids just made or what grades they just got. If so, it's possible that comparison is killing you. What about this one? Might be a little more personal, but still I gotta ask. Is money a constant source of stress in your life? Is it possible that you are maybe even having money problems from trying to live like fill in the blank? Someone you know in your life, right? You could blame a lot of things. You could blame some debt that you've got, or you could blame the gas prices or the inflation or the economy, right? But if you were honest, the more you look to your left and the more you look to your life, to the right, that the more you spend on things that you don't really need, that you don't really have the money for. It's possible that comparison is killing you. What about this? Is it possible that the things that you don't have keep you from enjoying the things that you do have? It happens to me all the time, right? Is it possible that the things that you don't have keep you from enjoying the things that you do have, right? Are the 12-foot ceilings that you don't have in your home keeping you from enjoying the really fine, perfectly great house that you do have? Is the vacation, you know, somewhere warm that you couldn't take? Is it preventing you from enjoying the few days that you did carve out to take somewhere a little closer to home? If so, it's possible that comparison is killing you. Is it possible for you that your spouse feels like you are dissatisfied with them because you're constantly subtly comparing them to someone else's spouse? You know, Johnny's wife makes home-cooked meals every night after work. And you know, Susie's husband, he works out 3 times a week. Here's a tough one. Last one I'll ask you. Is it possible, if you were honest, is there someone in your life, someone that you know that you are secretly hoping? Is there someone in your life that you would maybe secretly admit that you would enjoy seeing them fail? Right? This is maybe possibly one of the ugliest parts of human nature, but I think if we were all honest, we all do it. I know I've done it, and I think you have too, right? We celebrate oftentimes very silently when someone else experiences a little turbulence in their career or in their marriage or in their social life. Or we celebrate just a little bit when one of their kids, you know, kind of goes off the rails just a little bit. We should be able to celebrate with people who are celebrating. We should be able to mourn with people who are hurting. But the truth is the comparison trap, it won't let us do that. And so secretly we enjoy to see a bump in the road. It's possible that comparison is killing you and it's killing me. Now look here, I understand that we live in a, you know, work hard to get ahead kind of world. That's a good thing. I understand that's the way the world operates, that we have to work hard to get ahead in school or in sports or in the workplace or you know, somewhere else in the marketplace. I understand that that's the way the world works. So I'm not telling you to stop working hard. I'm not telling you to stop trying to achieve success in your life, right? Because fools, what? Fools fold their idle hands. Not saying to stop becoming the best that you can be. I guess I'm just inclined to believe what Solomon says here about it all. I guess I'm inclined to believe it when he says, yeah, I've seen it all. And this is how it all works, but it is not worth it when what we do is motivated by keeping up with our neighbor. I'm inclined to believe him when he says it is meaningless, like chasing the wind, because there is no wind in comparison. I'm not exactly sure who penned these words that I stumbled upon this week, but I came across a quote, and I want to share it with you. I want to leave you with it today. Here's what it says. It says, a flower does not think of competing with the flower next to it. What does it do? It just blooms. A flower does not think about competing with the flower next to it. It just blooms. Mid-Current, let's do the same thing. Whoever we are, wherever we are, whatever it is that we've got, let's just bloom. We have to remember, I want you to remember that God has a plan and a future that is meant for your good. It's meant for our good. God has a plan and a future that is custom designed for you and for me. And I don't think that we discover it. I don't think we ever escape the comparison trap or the stress or the anxiety that comes along with that trap. I don't think we escape it. I don't think we discover what it is that God has for us unless we have learned to live with one hand free and open to receive what it is that God wants to place in it. Let me pray. God, we're grateful for wisdom that you impart to us. Wisdom from people who have seen more, experienced more, and have a chance to give us some course correction along the way. God, I think comparison, this dangerous game we play of looking both ways, of looking to our left and looking to our right, if we were honest, God, I don't know where everyone is today, but I think if we were honest, it haunts most of us in some way. God, I think if we were honest, we would admit that there is some part of our life or some part of our soul that is being killed and destroyed and exhausted, ultimately by comparison. God, our striving to live up to some kind of standard or to surpass some standard that we think someone else has set. God, I pray that you would give us so much confidence of who you created us to be. I pray that you would, God, equip us and empower us to be the best that we can be. God, to not stop trying, to not stop achieving, and to work as hard as we can to reach the full potential that I think you have set for us, God. But would you help us to no longer use whoever it is that is on our left and whoever it is that is on our right? Would you help us to no longer allow those things to be the standard for who it is that we are? God, I pray that our only measure of success in life would be how much we feel like we are doing and fulfilling what it is and who it is that you have called us to be. How well we are fulfilling the assignment that you have given to us. God, I pray that would be the standard that we use to measure who it is that we are in this life. So God, help us all as a community, as friends and as neighbors, help us to figure out ways to take a break from comparison in a way that might really truly free us up to receive more of what it is that you have for us. We're asking for your help in this, God. We're grateful for this day and the chance to set our eyes and our hearts on you, and we pray all these things in the name of your son, Jesus Christ. Amen. Hey, we're really, really, really glad to have this place filled up with all of you today, and we are excited. I'm gonna bring this series to a close with one more week. Will that be week 3 in our series? Let's Take a Break next week, 10:30, right back here on site and online. We hope that you would be here for it. Before you go, if you do want to fill out a connection card or get to know someone from our team, they will be standing at the welcome desk and would absolutely love the chance to meet and connect with you. So please don't head on out of here without having a chance to say hello and good morning to someone new today. Other than that, have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy the sunshine, and we'll see you again soon. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Mid-Current Church. Be sure to join us next week for the final teaching in our series, Let's Take a Break. Visit visit us online during the week at midcurrentchurch.org and connect with us on Facebook and Instagram.